Hello, all my beautiful cinnabar moths, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Thank you for joining us this week on the Writer's Triangle. And today we're going to talk about what makes a great portal fantasy. And y'all know, if you've been listening to the podcast on a regular basis, and I hope that you have, and thank you if you have, that I absolutely love portal fantasies. And if y'all follow the press, you know that I absolutely love portal fantasies because we published three portal fantasies back to back to back for August, September, and October, just because they speak to me. My very, very favorite book was book one, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The other books get a little bit for me, the in the series, but I'll talk about that a different day. And that was one of the first portal fantasies that I read, and I absolutely loved the idea of having everything in life be horrific and being able to just walk through a wardrobe into chaos and magic, and everything is just different and new, and you get to become something other than you would have been if you never walked through the portal. Or if you had never crossed over, however the mechanism works, if you didn't cross over into another world. So that's sort of part one that makes a good portal fantasy, is having a really great reason for why the portal exists and having a really great reason for why the person crosses over into the portal. So, for example, in Drumfangil, it's a hereditary thing that the main character Marcus inherits from his dad. And this is not a spoiler because it happens in, like, geez, I think in the first chapter, if I'm pretty sure it's in the first chapter. And the main character gets there through hereditary and gets there through sleeping, and it's accidental and it's horrible at first. That trope of when they enter into the new world, it being horrible and strange and awful, I think, or at least scary in some kind of way, I think that ha absolutely has to be there. So having a good reason for why they get there is part of it, and Relatively Normal Secrets is also a portal fantasy, and they get there through accident. And Pixies in the Mist, they get there through meeting someone who opens this portal for them. So in two of them, they meet someone who opens the portal, and in the first one, it's a hereditary thing. Another way is happenstance. But knowing why they're going into the portal world that way and how they get there. So it usually starts off with a pretty mundane life, right? Nothing really going on. And then all of a sudden, wham, they're in a portal. Or another trope is that it starts off with a really horrible life and then they discover the portal because of the horrific things in their life. There's usually some drive in the character that creates the desire to go to the portal if it's not happenstance. So I want to talk about happenstance a little bit before I talk about something in their life propelling them towards it. Because for happenstance to be real and authentic, they have to be in the circumstances that creates the happenstance. And the way that they have to get there, the way that they get there has to make sense. So for Marcus, it's kind of birthright and his age, and that's how he happens to get there. In other portal fantasies that I've read, like using The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, they get there because they're nosy kids messing around, being ridiculous, and I think they're playing a game of hide and seek, and one of them ends up in the wardrobe, and that's how they find out that it's a portal. It has to make sense. Would your characters be doing the activity that leads them to the circumstances for them to encounter the portal? And then the way they interact with the portal, does that make sense? So if you have a character that, for example, never goes hiking, they're completely not athletic, could they end up going through a portal in the forest? Absolutely. Could they end up going to a portal in the forest because they went hiking? Absolutely. Does there need to be a reason for why they're doing this out of character behavior? Absolutely. Everything has to be justified in my mind. And that's the type of portal fantasies that I enjoy. And here's the thing, like I say every podcast, this is one person's opinion. This is my opinion on portal fantasies and happenstance. The person has to get there for some reason. So I don't care if they're abducted and they end up in the forest and they're trying to escape and boom, they end up in a portal, going through a portal. Just get me there in a way that makes sense, in a way that I can follow. Because if you're describing a sedentary character and then you have them acting really athletic and doing something really athletic, that's not going to flow. That's not going to have what I consider to be character continuity. And character continuity is either continuous behavior or changes in behavior that are explained to the reader so that I can go on this journey with you. Don't leave me out of the fun. Don't leave me wondering, okay, how did this sedentary person end up in the forest? So, for example, using me, I am what I consider to be living the life of a sick Victorian child because I'm almost completely bedridden. So if you were going to write me going through a portal that happened in a time that happened in the woods, for me, I just can't see how I would get to the woods personally. Because getting from the car, like I could absolutely drive to the woods and then getting from the car into the forest, I don't see how that would happen. And I have a compromised immune system, so I really don't go into forests at all. But I did watch this one, I think it's a French show, and I think it's called Into the Dark. And they did have a character who had really bad allergies and didn't like the forest and was just really timid and would never be in the forest, end up in a forest. And how they got there made sense to me. So make it make sense. Make how your character gets from A to B, from their everyday life to the portal, make it make sense. I think situational portals are easier to do. Happenstance portals, I think, are a little bit trickier because they're not situation based in my mind. Happenstance is just you're walking along, bam, you're in a portal. And then the other types of portal where it's the difference between happenstance and circumstance, I think if your circumstances puts you in a place where there's portals everywhere, then you're gonna eventually go through one of those portals, and that's just gonna happen because you're in the place, you're in the circumstances where you're surrounded by portals. Situation is you're in a situation where you come and encounter with the portal and then you cross through it. And then there's hereditary where you inherit it. And there's all sorts of lots of different ways to get there and how you get through the portal. Like it could be that you come of a certain age and then boom, you get into port. You are able to pass through portals that someone tells you about or something like that. So the first part of having a really successful portal fantasy is having the characters get from here, where they are now in the real world, to the portal in a way that the reader can follow. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to follow any rules other than your reader needs to be able to follow along with it. And some people who write portal fantasies do a really good job of having it be a mystery and not letting the readers follow along with it. Those are valid choices to make as a writer. I'm not trying to squeeze anyone's shoes. I'm saying for me, if you want me to get to the into a portal fantasy, you have to get my buy-in on how they get there. And that's step one for me. If I don't understand how they're in the portal fantasy, I mean, how they're in the portal, how they crossed over to the other world, I'm lost and I'm not into it. I'm like, I'm out of here. I don't, it's gonna be a do not finish for me because I will have lost interest. And again, I'm one person, and you can say, you know what? And say it in the comments if you have a good reason for why you like being lost or why you like writing a really confusing beginning to a portal fantasy, because there is a market for that and people do read it. I'm just not one of those people, right? So I'm talking about what I think makes a great portal fantasy. I'm also talking about what everybody at Cinemar Moth thinks and what the feedback we get from beta readers on portal fantasies when you get those high 4 and 5 star ratings. What we find is that the person enjoyed the mechanism of crossing over into a new world and they enjoyed the characters. I don't know why in portal fantasies there has to be at least one likable character, but that kind of seems to be what everybody wants. Personally, I don't need to like any of the characters to read a book. I can hate read a book. Like, I hate this character. I want to watch them be destroyed, kind of reading. And then if they're not destroyed at the end, I can be like, ugh, gross, but still really enjoy the book and just be bummed out and I hope that they get what's coming to them in book two, kind of thing. So now that we've talked about the mechanism of how to get there has to be a mechanism of what creates the portal. And for me, you can have someone come into the space and create the portal. You can have the portal already exist. You can have the portal, the way of crossing over, be sleep or whenever you turn right or just some sort of way that they crossed over. One of my favorite books on London has them crossing over by going, I believe, into the sewer. And that was really fun and interesting and kind of gross to think about. Like, how would you end up there, you know? And for me, that was exciting and fun and interesting. The other part of it is once we get them to the portal, once we get them through the portal, and we've decided what the portal's going to look like and how the portal's going to work, what are the rules of the portal? And the rules of the portal are basically whatever you want them to be. And how they get to the portal is however you want them to get there. And what they find on the other side is whatever you want it to be. This is your imagination, your creativity. For me, if they're crossing over to get to another place that's just like the place we're in, that's just like Earth, nothing's different at all, absolutely nothing changes. I struggle a bit with that. If I'm honest, I feel like what was the point of having them go through a portal to just be back on Earth? If there's no like time travel, if there's no jumping through a portal to get to another country. So it can be Earth, but if they're going through a portal to end up back in their bedroom and they started in their bedroom, for me, I wonder why did I just do all that work? And when I read, I consider me doing work for the author. I feel like I'm working for the author because I'm reading your book. And so I'm working for you. I'm doing a service for you, is how I view reading every author's book that I read. I feel like me reading a book is a service because you wrote the book for it to be read. Why not go ham? Why not just be wild with it, right? And do whatever you think should be done. And have fun with it. For me, I like when the world is different and consistently different. So I've already mentioned consistency once, and I just feel like consistency and continuity are key. I really don't like books that lack continuity. I really don't like books that lack world building. So for me, the portal fantasy is the epitome of world building. I like when people create an absolute, entirely new world and everything is completely different. Those are usually my favorites. I want like different floral, different fauna, different species, different customs, different food, just everything to be different. And I like that to come naturally. And I don't like it. I don't like to learn about the world through being told what the world is. I feel like I want to read it like Susan tripped over a large purple vine and grasped the turquoise and grasped a turquoise branch above her to steady herself. That to me is like, okay, we've got these different colors of some sort of vine or tree, and I'm not sure what. And Susan looked at, the green lake, wondering if she could drink from it, but she was so thirsty, she had no choice. She knew either way she'd die, kind of thing, and have her drink from it. Rather than having characters tell each other about the world, I'd rather have them experience it and then have some of the nuances of the world in conversation, but not the majority of it. And I don't want that new worldness to wear off. I want it to be consistent and throughout the book, and for there to be continual references of it. For example, in Drumfingil, there's a reference to the different food that happens many, many chapters into the book that reminds you beyond the characters that they're in a different world. And I thought that was really clever. And in Relatively Normal Secrets, the world, you're reminded of the world being different through different actions that they're taking and different settings that they're in, and the way that the mystery of the book is being delivered. And with Pixies in the Mist, you're reminded of it being a different world through all of the actions and settings are, I want to say, earth adjacent and sort of earth with a twist. And I liked that. I liked that, okay, this is something completely different. This doesn't feel like Earth. This doesn't feel like my house. It doesn't feel like the character went from their house to their house. Another type of portal that I really enjoy is to a portal to move through time or a portal to move through place, like to travel. A portal to move through time, you really need to make sure that you have all of your time references down. Even if you're doing something that is supposed to be set in the 80s, I believe Not My Ruckus is set in the 80s, and I know that Chad did a lot of research about the 80s, even though he was a young person during that time. But someone like me, I remember the 80s really well. And I also have a fascination with the 30s and the 20s. And everybody has a time period that they're fascinated with. So it helps keep the reader, if you're going back in time, it helps to keep the reader in the story if there aren't any consistencies. It's like, what type of communications did they have available to them? What type of food was available to them? What did houses look like? What did travel look like? All of those things need to be really consistent when you're doing time travel into the past. When you're doing time travel into the future, you have a lot more leeway if your portal goes to the future. And that leeway, though, does need to have some way for us to understand how what happens and what's going on today turns into that future. Or it can be something wildly different. What I struggle with is when there's a toe in both. And so for me, the Man in High Castle, I just don't get it. It confuses me. And so I know it's hugely popular. I know this may be just like a really unpopular opinion, and I know it's not a portal fantasy. I know it's a alternate future, but I can't get there. Like, I don't understand how it relates to an alternate ending for World War II. Why would the United States be different? That doesn't make any sense to me at all whatsoever. There was no fighting on U.S. soil. There was no plans to fight on U.S. soil. The biggest, and the U.S. was so slow to fight, to get in the, on the, to fight on the European front. And I think that if the Germans had won, what about the Japanese? I don't know. It just, it, and so you see how my mind works and how I'm just like, I have all of these what ifs. So I can never suspend disbelief because I just don't buy it. It's not authentic to me in any way. And I know I might have, because I don't know if it's the man in High Castle, the man from High Castle, or I know it's some High Castle and man configuration, but I just really don't like it at all. I think it would, I think it's hugely popular, so I think my opinion of me saying this is not shocking and it doesn't affect anyone's enjoyment of it. I'm not telling anyone not to engage with it. I'm just saying it's not for me. And that goes down to world building in a way that's consistent and believable and that makes sense to the readers and how you get them there. And a lot of readers just get there quick with the High Castle. I didn't. I'm completely lost. The reason that I keep mentioning that and saying that is because it shows the gulf that can exist between one person and everybody else. So my one opinion doesn't change anything and shouldn't change anything about your writing unless you're writing a portal fantasy to send to me. If you're writing a portal fantasy that you want to submit to Cinnabar Moth Publishing, then it's got to make sense. I don't like confusing, disjointed stories. I can't get past them. I have dyslexia, so reading for me, I have a lot of tricks that I use to read. And it's really difficult for me when things are jumbled on purpose because my mind takes a lot of things and just jumbles them anyway. So I need as much clarity in writing as possible for me to get from point A to point B successfully and to enjoy the book. So with world building, know your world. Do the five senses. What does the world smell like? What does it taste like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? What does it look like? And incorporate that throughout the book. And you can incorporate it with any type of narration that you're doing, but really make sure that you're putting in enough information to transport the reader. And that goes for any story when it comes to world building. You really need to transport the reader to the place that they are. And with Pixies in the Mist with Thraster, there was a lot of work on what is the mist? What is the texture of the mist? Is it mist like when it rains? Is it mist like a misty morning? Is it mist that exists in this world? Or is it a completely different kind of mist? And if it is, that needs to be explained so that the reader can travel into the mist, know where they're going, and have some signposts. And that's what world building does. And world building in a portal fantasy, I don't believe you can have a successful portal fantasy without world building. I just don't. This is the one thing that I think everyone would agree with, is that if there's no world, unless they're going into a space that there's nothing and there's no world, and that would be a trippy book to read, but I think I would read it kind of thing. It's not going to work if you don't, if you don't like titillate my senses, if you don't immerse me in this new place that I've arrived. And I think that goes for any place, right? You want to know where the person is in time and space. And for me, that's one of the things that my dyslexia affects, is not understanding time and space along with reading. So if you give me a book with no signposts and no anchoring, then I can't get into the book and I can't read it because I don't know where I am and I just feel discombobulated and confused the entire time. And I don't tend to read books that confuse me. I don't enjoy them. So the long and short of it, I guess, is what makes a good portal fantasy is, one, having a portal, you know, what's your portal? And two, knowing, what does the portal do? Does the portal transport them to a different world? Does the portal transport them to outer space? Does the portal move through time? Does the portal simply allow them to travel, or does it do all of the above? And letting the reader know, this is what the portal does, and this is how the portal functions. And you let the reader know that by having your characters experience that. And if the portal does multiple things, I kind of feel like there needs to be multiple trips into the in and out of the portal to understand that, rather than trying to pack everything into the first trip. Write it and trust your readers to hang in there and get to the next thing that the portals does. I don't like when, okay, we're traveling through time, we're traveling to space, we're traveling, like, all of this different type of travel on top of each other. It's tricky to write well. It's tricky to write well and keep clarity and continuity. So I feel like a simple first trip, love it, get it, I know what this portal does. Have it do something different on the second trip, right on, love it, I get it. I know that this is a what I think of as a trickster portal, where you can't go to the same place twice or whatever through this mechanism. And I feel like you have to know, can your characters come back? Are they going to come back into this real world, and what the time difference is? Is a day in Portal Land a day here on our side of the portal? And if so, then if the characters return, time has to have passed. It can't have stayed still, and I need to know how much time has passed. Once you get on the other side of the portal, I need a fully fleshed out world. I want all five senses immersion, and I want to believe it. I want it to be authentic, and I feel like consistency creates authenticity. So for me, if the leaves are going to be, if the floral and fauna are going to be unusual colors, and the food is going to be unusual shapes and colors, I say get into it and lean into it and give me lots of different colors, give me lots of different shapes, but don't give them to me all at once. Like the first, I love the first visit being just a bop over for a few minutes and then back out. And I also enjoy the first trip being the forever trip, or the first trip being, okay, I've entered the portal and now I'm going to be here the rest of the book. Either way, pacing is key, and not info dumping is key. Nobody can explore everything in a space in a couple of pages. So try and pace it out so that we're experiencing new aspects of the world in every chapter, or at least, you know, and then try to have the world, I usually rule of thumb is have the world fully fleshed out by the first third of the book so that you don't lose your readers. And readers being me, I think some readers really like a slow, epic portal fantasy. I'm not one of those. I like my portal fantasies to be a one-day read to max and keep it moving and keep the action up, keep, you know, the discoveries up, keep the pacing on point so I can get in and out. I don't sit down to read a portal fantasy and expect to be reading it for weeks. So that's my thoughts on how to write a portal fantasy. If you have any questions, feel free to leave them in the comment section, or you can leave them over. You can hit us up on Twitter at Cinnabar Moth Pub. Yeah, Cinnabar Moth Pub. Or you can even leave a comment. I think you can leave comments on the website at cinnabar.com, but I'm not sure. So I think it's safe if you're on YouTube to leave a comment here, and I will definitely see it if you tweet it at us with any questions you may have about my thoughts about portal fantasy. And I absolutely love talking with authors and helping authors develop their voice. And you can ask me questions even if you don't ever intend to submit to us, because that's not the energy I'm bringing to publishing. I'm bringing a collaborative energy and one that supports authors and just loves authors. I think y'all are amazing. I think the world needs more stories, and I just appreciate all y'all for writing and keeping us entertained. So I hope this ramble was interesting I hope it was insightful and I hope that you got something out of it. And I want to thank all of our beautiful cinnabar moths or any kind of moth you want to be. Or like I say every week, you can be a butterfly, but I'm not Mariah Carey, for listening to this week's episode of The Writer's Triangle. And I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye. Bye. Bye.